I'd like for us to pick up in Acts chapter 2. It's the concluding couple of points that Stan had written on the handout from last week, but it's central to the whole idea of why we're studying this idea of the miracles of Jesus to begin with. When you read through the four gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they're written with a very specific purpose, to give a defense of who Jesus was, to instruct on the things that he had taught on, and his character, the things that he required, but also to give a defense of who he claimed to be. He faced much opposition during his life of those who, despite the many signs and miracles and wonders that he had performed, still refused to believe his claim to be the Son of God. And yet, we see throughout the gospel accounts, throughout his life, he performed a multitude of signs to prove who he was, and yet still some would not believe. So picking up over in Acts chapter 2, it's interesting to note what Peter couches this first sermon upon. In Acts chapter 2, beginning in verse 22, he says, "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know. Him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it." In another week or two, we'll be talking about that last part there in verse 24, about the resurrection of the Christ as another idea or another signification of who he was and God's approval of Jesus. But we want to talk tonight about the first part there in verse 22. He says that Jesus of Nazareth was a man attested or confirmed by God to you by the miracles, wonders, and signs which God did through him in your midst, as you yourselves also know. And then he finishes this discourse in Acts chapter 2 and verse 36. At the end of it all, he says, "Therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ." So their understanding of the signs, miracles, and wonders, the things that he had performed, was paramount for them to understand that the person that they had crucified here just a few days earlier, God had made known to them that he was both Lord and Christ. So it's a paramount interest in Peter's understanding and in this sermon here that they understand that Jesus was attested or confirmed by God through the signs, miracles, and wonders that he had performed as to who he was. As we picked up last week, or as we were ending last week, we were defining the ideas of what those words mean. The word miracle, as you'll see on your page, comes from the Greek word dunamis, meaning power or mighty work. It implies the aspect of it to that there is something supernatural, something that goes beyond a natural ability to perform. So if a miracle is performed, it's shown that it's something beyond the natural ability of a man or human of the world to perform on its own, but it requires some supernatural ability. The idea of wonder, in it, it expresses the effect that the miracle performed would have on those who behold the action. A wonder is something that when you look at it, you're struck with awe. You're inspired by it. You understand that there is some significance behind this action behind that you saw performed with it. If you will, consider the idea of Elijah on Mount Carmel. What was the purpose of that demonstration that Elijah had between the prophets of Baal and between the altar of God? He had soaked the altar of God with water, provided no fire, and he had made it such that it would be nearly impossible even for people with fire to go up and ignite that altar easily. And he said, "Let's pray to the gods. You pray to Baal, I'll pray to Jehovah God, and we'll see who can light the fire and accept this sacrifice before them." And when the prophets of Baal spent all afternoon trying to do so and were failures at getting their sacrifice burned by their god Baal, when Elijah prayed to Jehovah God and he consumed not only the sacrifice but the altar and wicked up all of the water around it, it was a definitive statement from God that he was the one with power. And he did it before the eyes of all of those present. And those people marveled at the wonder that they had seen. It proved to them that Elijah was a prophet of the one true God, the one who would answer, who would listen to the prayers of his righteous when they prayed to him. He was the one listening, the one with power. So it was a wonderful experience. And I think also when you consider in Matthew chapter 21, we have the story when Jesus was hungry one morning and he passed by a fig tree. And the fig tree had no figs on it. And Jesus said to it, "Be withered and let no one eat from you ever again," because it had no figs on it when he came by. And it says immediately the fig tree withered up. And it had died in the presence of his disciples. And it says that his disciples marveled at such a thing occurring. It had the impression upon them that this was one with great authority. It confirmed in their minds the authority of Jesus and the power that he had. So that's what's considered when we think about the intended effect that a wonder has on those witnessing it. And then the last one that was mentioned in Acts 2:22 was the signs. And this one in particular is what I want us to consider tonight, is the sign or the significance of the action that is performed. It stands written out that the sign is one thing that is used to distinguish one from among others. This denotes the purpose of the miracle, and in particular the ones that we're going to be talking about tonight are those used to designate Jesus as the anointed of God. The signs were used to designate one above the others, to show the importance that one had above others. And that's what we see over in Hebrews chapter 2 as well. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 2 with me quickly. I'd like to read the first few verses of Hebrews chapter 2. In this context, the Hebrew writer is describing how much greater Jesus is than many other characters that we read about throughout Old Testament scriptures. And in particular here, he's talking about the revealed word. In chapter 1 and verse 1, he says that God, who at various times and various ways spoke in time past to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds. He goes on to describe how much greater he is than the angels and the rest of chapter 1. And then down in chapter 2, he says, "Therefore, we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. For if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord, and was confirmed to us by those who heard him? God also bearing witness, both with signs and wonders, with various miracles and gifts of the Holy Spirit, according to his own will." So here the Hebrew writer is putting the emphasis on our heeding the word of God, the revealed message. And he says, because we have it revealed to us without a doubt that God has attested that these things are true, by the various signs, miracles, and wonders that were performed, both by Jesus as he was preaching to the multitudes, and also confirmed to us by his witnesses, the apostles that went out from him, who witnessed the things that he had done. The word was also confirmed to us by those who heard, because they had the ability to perform miracles and signs that show that their authority came from God as well. So while we're on that idea of it, I'd like for us just to introduce, as we're going to go through the rest of this, as Stan's spread out a few different ideas of what miracles Jesus performed, he separated them out into different types of categories, where Jesus showed his power over diseases, his power over demons, his power over death, his power over the material world and over nature itself. And I'd like for us also to consider the aspect that these are signs made to specific people too. One last verse I want us to consider over in Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, we see throughout this chapter, Jesus has performed very many signs and miracles. He's cast out demons up to this point. Multitudes of people have witnessed him healing the sick among the land, performing all kinds of miracles. And now while he's out here in Matthew chapter 12, and after he's cast out in a demon-possessed man in verse 22. In verse 24 it says, "Now when the Pharisees heard it, they said, 'This fellow does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub, the ruler of the demons.' So Jesus goes on to rebuke the Pharisees there. Then down in verse 38, at the end of that rebuke, he says, "Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, 'Teacher, we want to see a sign from you.'" So after he has performed a multitude of signs and miracles in their presence, here they're saying, "We want to see a specific sign, a significant sign from you." Beyond the things that they had already witnessed and been told of, they wanted a specific sign, something that was even more special in their presence to show his power. And in this instance, Jesus replies in verse 39, "But he answered and said to them, 'An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth.'" And he goes on to describe how many other things people had repented for much less than the things that these people had witnessed in their midst. They had repented of their ways and would have turned to God if the things that they had seen were done in their midst. And yet these people here are saying, "Well, show us another sign, and then we'll believe in you." Jesus saying, despite all the things that you've already witnessed, you still would not believe, and I will not perform anything special for them to feed their own greedy minds. And that's significant over in Matthew chapter 11 as well. Matthew chapter 11, in verse 20, it's another rebuke to those who would not repent, who would not believe him. In Matthew chapter 11, verse 21, he says, "Woe to you, Chorazin, and woe to you, Bethsaida. For if the mighty works which were done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes." So again, there were many things that Jesus said were performed in the witness of all of these people, and yet there were still many who refused to believe him despite the signs that were performed. In that regard, I'd like for us also to consider that many of these signs, all of these signs done by Jesus, were done in the presence of Jewish people as well. And those hold a significance beyond what we just understand through some of these that were also seen by the Gentile nations around. But many of these held a specific significance. The things that Jesus did was for a reason. Many of these things were to fulfill messianic prophecies that were made about the coming Messiah. The one who would come as the anointed, the approved of God, would be performing certain of these miracles. But it's also interesting to note, when we think about the Old Testament, how many prolific miracle workers do we see, or those that God used to perform miracles from? You think back on the Old Testament, Moses comes to mind. God worked many miracles through Moses, gave many signs to the people through Moses. And you also consider it, there's Elijah and Elisha, who God worked many signs and miracles through those. And to attest to the people that these were authorized prophets from God, that the things that they spoke, the things that they commanded, were coming from God. Outside of those, we don't see very many others who God used to perform miracles around. But these were fairly prolific in the things that they had done. So I'd like for us to consider, as we go through these types and categories of miracles and consider those, I also want us to consider and think about how some of those parallel to those people, Moses, Elijah, and Elisha, and the type of significance that that would have to those who are familiar with the Old Testament as well. Before we get into it, yes? Yes, yes, they do. So we have a few of those, like Daniel and Joseph, right? So we have a few of those as well. And in this list, we're focusing mostly on the physical nature of it. And if you consider all of the foreknowledge that Jesus had, you could come up with a list. I saw the number about 50 or so recorded miracles, if you consider the foreknowledge that Jesus had. These that we have before us account for about 30 or 36 recorded miracles, which John says there was even many more than those that were performed and were not recorded for us as well. Okay. Anything else? Kyle?
Very quickly, Jesus had healed a man, and then the Jews had witnesses on a Sabbath, and in John 5, in verse 19 and 20, this was showing the Bible said that Jesus had made himself equal with God. So I'll read those two verses. And then Jesus says, and answers that, he says, most assuredly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of the Father. Let me try. The Son can do nothing of himself, but what he sees the Father do. For whatever he does, the Son does in like manner. For the Son loves, which means Father loves the Son, and shows him all things that he does than himself does. And he will show him greater works than these, that you may marvel.
Exactly. So again, it's the absolute attestation that God approved of Jesus, the message that he preached, things that he was doing, and who he claimed to be. Alright? Anything else before we get started? Alright, then turn over with me to Luke chapter 7, if you would. I'd like for us to consider, as we're starting this, the idea that some of these were performed as fulfilled prophecy. Over in Luke chapter 7 and verse 22, beginning. Well, we'll start back in Luke chapter 7 and verse 18. It says, "And the disciples of John," that's being John the Baptist, "reported to him concerning all these things. And John, calling two of his disciples to him, sent them to Jesus, saying, 'Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?' When the man had come to him, they said, 'John the Baptist has sent to us, saying, sent us to you, saying, Are you the coming one, or do we look for another?' And that very hour he cured many of infirmities, afflictions, and evil spirits, and to many blind he gave sight." So, in answer to their question, Jesus performed signs and miracles before these two disciples that John had sent to him to prove to them who he was in the presence of John's disciples. And his answer in verse 22, it says, "Jesus answered and said to them, 'Go and tell John the things you have seen and heard, that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the gospel preached to them. And blessed is he who is not offended or caused to stumble because of me.'" We see that this is a prophecy that the Jewish people would have been familiar with when they were expecting the coming Messiah. And as John is asking, "Are you the coming one, the one that we are expecting?" Jesus replies by performing these signs and miracles, and then quotes this, or replies this to the disciples and says, "Look at the many things that you have seen and heard." When you look over in Isaiah chapter 35, in Isaiah chapter 35, part of this passage is referencing the things that Isaiah had said would come from the Comforter that God would send to his people. In Isaiah chapter 35, beginning in verse 3, it says, "Encourage the exhausted and strengthen the feeble. Say to those with anxious heart, 'Take courage, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. The recompense of God will come, but he will save you. Then the eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will shout for joy. For waters will break forth in the wilderness and streams in the Arabah." So again, we see often in Jesus' language and in those of the New Testament writers, they make reference to these Old Testament prophecies, these Old Testament writings, to show the people, "I am doing something that is shown to you from God himself. So pay attention to the things that you have seen and heard, because these are the things that are being fulfilled in your presence." As Jesus had once said too, when he went into the synagogue and he read from a certain passage in Isaiah, he proclaimed to the people, "This day this passage has been fulfilled in your hearing." So we see that Jesus used these passages such as this to help bring people's minds back to who they were expecting, and that he was fulfilling those things in front of them. While you're back there in Isaiah, turn over to Isaiah chapter 8 as well. It's interesting to tie this part in with the last passage there in Isaiah chapter 8. It ties in with what we just read in Luke chapter 7, verse 23. It says, "And blessed is he who is not offended or caused to stumble because of me." Over in Isaiah chapter 8, beginning in verse 14, he says, "Then he shall become a sanctuary, but to the But to both the houses of Israel, a stone to strike, and a rock to stumble over, and a snare and a trap for the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Many will stumble over them, then they will fall and be broken, they will even be snared and caught. When you look throughout the rest of Isaiah chapter 8 and chapter 9 in particular, these two chapters tie together again the coming comfort that God had promised to his people. And in chapter 9 in particular, we referenced a few weeks ago, verse 1, where there was the prophecy that the light of God would come out of the land of Naphtali and Zebulun, those who had been in dark times throughout their history. It says the light of glory will come out of Naphtali and Zebulun. And that's where Jesus began doing his miracles and his signs, and he began his teaching coming out of those two lands. And then he also continues on and speaks about many other ideas in chapter 9 that point towards the Messiah. So we see here in these two passages that Jesus is trying to report to John and to those who are witnessing these things and in the presence and hearing what he has to say when he says, "Go and tell John that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have the gospel preached to them." Just as Isaiah said it would happen when the comfort of God would come to his people, it is happening now in your presence. Go and report those things that you have seen and that you have heard. All right. Anything else on that before we move on? I want us to consider a couple of aspects about the comparison now between the prophets. Kyle? Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's exactly the point that they were trying to make there with it. Is in some of these other passages, I don't think we're get to them, but the idea that he refers to themselves as Emmanuel, God with us, in some of these prophecies from the book of Isaiah and Jeremiah, talks about God being among his people. And here it is, when he's performing these signs, the people that are witnessing it glorify God and say God is among his people. He has visited his people. So many of those who were witnessing it recognized it, but so many others refused because they didn't want to, as we talked about in the scribes and the Pharisees who rejected him. All right. And let's consider a couple of these examples of the miracles that were performed. And like for us to consider and compare some of these that Jesus performed with what the people recognized that Moses had performed as well. Jesus makes a few references to some of the signs that Moses had performed. But, you know, Moses was given certain signs to proclaim to the people that he was the prophet of God, that they were to listen to him. The first of which, when he said, "Well, what if the people don't believe me when I say to them that I've come with a message from you?" He says, "Well, take the rod that's in your hand, cast it down to the ground, and it'll become a snake. When you take it up again, it'll become a rod back in your hand." God provided him a sign that showed the power and authority coming from God. He said, "Well, if that's not enough, stick your hand that's whole and clean inside your tunic. When you pull it out, it'll be leprous. The people will see it. And then when you put it back in again, then it'll be clean when you pull it back out the second time." So again, God's showing through Moses his power over the natural world, his power over the health of the body as well. He's showing different signs to attest to the people that Moses is his approved prophet. One of the first things that God did in the presence of the Egyptians, the first plague, if you remember over in Exodus chapter 7, the first plague was to turn the Nile River into blood. So God showed that he had the power over the natural world when Moses was speaking to Pharaoh and said, "God of Israel is going to turn the river into blood." And it was, and he recognized, the people were to recognize the power of God. Magicians said, "Well, we can turn water into blood as well," as they're part of their deceit of Pharaoh. But here God is showing that he had power over the natural world. And parallel to that, when we consider the first of the signs that Jesus performed, What was it that John records for us? He says this is the first of the signs that Jesus had performed. In John chapter 2, at the wedding feast, in John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, they were at the wedding feast, Jesus with his mother and disciples, and they had run out of beverage. They had run out of wine here at the wedding feast. And Jesus has them go and fill pots with water. And then when they drew out the water and tasted it, it was wine in their mouth. So they had tasted it. Jesus changed water into wine, again showing his power over the natural world. But it's similar and parallel to the things that God had done through Moses when he turned the Nile River into blood. Another thing that Jesus makes mention of in John chapter 6 is the aspect of the bread of life. This one, Jesus has just previously and earlier in John chapter 6 fed a multitude of people. I believe this was the 5,000. Yes, John chapter 6 and verse 10, Jesus has fed 5,000 people with, it was only 7 loaves here, 5 loaves. 5,000 fed with 5 loaves of bread. A multitude of people fed with something that should not have been significant even for maybe a dozen people themselves. But yet these were filled with the food that Jesus had provided for them. And then over in John chapter 6, later on down in verse 26, Jesus is rebuking the multitudes who have followed him the next day, and he says, "You seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled." So again, Jesus said, when they had witnessed him healing the many people the day before, they listened to the things he had to say, and then they had fed, he had fed them miraculously with very little food. He says, "You're not following me because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled." Then he rebukes them and says, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him." So again, we see here that Jesus is able to perform and have power over material things in this miraculous multiplication of 5 loaves to feed 5,000. And the people here say later on, "Well, Moses gave us bread from heaven." And Jesus corrects them and says, "God the Father provided the bread, the manna that the people laid out in the wilderness." But they are appealing to the miracle that God had performed and Moses explained to the people about the manna. And they say, "Well, God fed the people manna for 40 years. You fed us one day with it. What else can you do?" The significance that they're saying here. "What sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do?" Down in verse 30. In verse 31, "Our fathers ate the manna in the desert. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." So again, Jesus begins to rebuke the multitudes here because they saw the sign but did not understand its significance, but rather were only greedy for the things that it had accomplished for them. Another one on this same vein that I think is interesting, and I hadn't remembered until looking through things tonight, over in 2 Kings chapter 4. We had talked a few weeks ago in Sunday morning lesson about the parallels between John the Baptist and Elijah. Many things that they had done, and John the Baptist is even referred to as Elijah. Some of the things we're going to talk about tonight show that Jesus and Elijah performed similar things. But in 2 Kings chapter 4, there's a couple of interesting accounts where Elisha has just been given the power that God had given to Elijah. And he begins performing many signs among the people as a new prophet of God. But in 2 Kings chapter 4, beginning in verse 38, when he's feeding among the prophets of the land, they had taken some food and put it into the stew, some gourds or mushrooms, however your version might read, but they were poisonous. The people that were eating this stew were poisoned by the things that they were eating, and they call out and say, "There's death in the pot." Well, Elisha hears it. He takes some grain, some normal grain, sprinkles it into the pot, and says, "Now eat this." And all the people that were poisoned by the poison that had been put into the pot were then healed and were able to eat of the stew again. Again, showing that God had power over the natural world and the material things. But right after that, one that I had forgotten, there was a man who brought in of his first fruits to give to the prophet as a sacrifice to God. He was giving of his first fruits. He brought 24 barley loaves to the prophet Elisha as a sacrifice to God. And Elisha says, give it to the people around. Well, his servant Gehazi says, well, there's 100 people here. 24 loaves will not spread among 100 people. And Elisha responds back, hand it out, for God has said that they will be fed and there will be some left over. Again, this is an account that I had forgotten about too, but here he says, even back here, Elisha takes these insignificant amount of loaves to be able to feed the multitudes and says, God has said they shall be fed and there will be some left over. So they were fed and there were food left over as well, just as Elisha had said. But see, in these two examples where Jesus had done the same thing, it's a much greater number of people. Elisha shared it among 100 people. Jesus shared it among, as the John chapter 6 we had just read, 5,000 people with only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And then in Matthew chapter 15, there were 4,000 people fed with 7 loaves and few fish. So again, in both instances, things that should not have been able to suffice for but just a few people, God provided for thousands in these instances. So what they had seen and known and had recorded in their history that Elisha, the prophet, approved prophet of God, had been able to do, Jesus performed the same thing on a much greater magnitude and says, this is a sign for you to understand who I am. On that same path, we see also that Elijah was being, that God performed through Elijah the feeding of a widow and her son during a time of drought. In 1 Kings chapter 17, Elijah was sent to the widow of Zarephath when the rest of the land was in a drought and food was scarce. She was about to eat her last meal, and yet God provided for her and her son and Elijah throughout the rest of the drought by allowing their flour and their oil to never cease during the whole time of the drought until it would be over. And then we also see something similar too, where Elisha and a widow, one of the widows of the prophets in 2 Kings chapter 4, at the beginning of that chapter, where she had come, her husband had died, and debt collectors were coming, seeking to take even her sons away from her. So she calls for Elisha, and God provides for this widow. She had one vase of oil left. She goes out, and Elisha has her gather multitude, all the jars and pots that she can, go into a room, close the door, and start to fill up all the rest of those pots with that one last vase of oil that she had. And she filled multitudes of pots until there were no more pots to be had or to be filled. And we see again where Jesus performed similar things, where there was so little and to be provided for so many, and yet he proved his power over the material world around them by multiplying it significantly. Anything else on that before we go on to the next couple of spots? Yes?
When you're talking about Jesus feeding the 5,000 in John 6, and I love the response to some men who saw the sign that Jesus had done, and they quote one book and they saw it that said, truly, so this is truly the prophet who has come into the world.
Exactly. And that was the whole point of it. It was to be a sign that Jesus was the one to come. And some of those people did understand. All right. Another next aspect of it, when we consider what Elijah had done when he prayed to God in 1 Kings chapter 17 and 18, he prayed to God that there would be a drought upon the land. Again, this is the record that James refers to when he speaks about the power of prayer. He says, Elijah, a man like you and I, prayed that there'd be no rain upon the land for 3 years, and the rains did not come. Again, he was praying to God, and God showed his power over the natural world there in causing that drought for 3 years. Then when Elijah prayed again, the rains came. In like manner, Jesus showed his power over the natural world on multiple occasions, one of which in Luke chapter 8, where he and his disciples are traveling across the sea, And they're in the middle of the sea. It's at night. Jesus is asleep in the bottom of the boat in Luke chapter 8. Beginning in verse 22, we see that he's asleep in the bottom of the sea, and then the winds and the waves become tempestuous. And in verse 23, it says they were filling with water, and they were in jeopardy or great danger. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, "Master, Master, we are perishing." Then he arose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was a calm. But he said to them, "Where is your faith?" And they were afraid and marveled, saying to one another, "Who can this be? For he commands even the winds and water, and they obey him." So on this instance, it was a very tempestuous sea. Storm had come upon them, and Jesus rebuked it, and it stopped. Just as Elijah had shown God had the power over nature as well in the drought and then the rain when asked for it. And we see other instances of this over in Mark chapter 4, verse 36, and John chapter 6 as well, where Jesus is seen walking on the water, and even allows Peter to come out and to walk on the water towards him in one of these instances. So again, he's showing his power over nature. Next, I'd like for us to consider some of these aspects in his power over death. Remember a few of the instances where both Elijah and Elisha were called upon when someone had lost a child. They had died by some instance. Elijah or Elisha came and prayed and rested upon the child, and the child received its life again after it had been dead for hours in a couple of instances. These people had received their life again. They were verified dead, and yet they received life. And we see multiple occasions where Jesus performs the same thing. Over in Luke chapter 7, beginning in verse 11, it says, "Now it happened the day after that he, that being Jesus, went to a city called Nain. Many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd. And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, 'Do not weep.' Then he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And he said, 'Young man, I say to you, arise.' So he who was dead sat up and began to speak, and he presented him to his mother. Then fear came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, 'A great prophet has risen up among us, and God has visited his people.'" What Kyle was referring to earlier here in this aspect. But again, it shows even his power over death. And again, it was a sign that earlier prophets had accomplished too. And of course, the greatest of these that we have recorded that made a great significant impact on the people over in John chapter 11, the raising of Lazarus. Here was a man who had been dead for 4 days. He had been dead and buried inside of a tomb. He was well known to be dead. The people had been mourning for him, and 4 days later, Jesus raised him from the grave. Again, he shows his power over death. One of the other ones, too, his power over diseases. This is one that I think is an interesting one, too, when we consider back to the time of Elisha. In 2 Kings chapter 5, a Syrian named Naaman came to the land of Israel, seeking to be healed by the prophet that was in the land of Israel. And Naaman found Elisha, and Elisha sent a messenger out to him, told him what God would require of him to be healed, to go dip in the Jordan 7 times, and his leprosy would be healed from him. And when Naaman finally did, his leprosy was healed from him. And yet we see Jesus doing similar things constantly too, not just for one, but for many people who were leprous. And Luke chapter 17 is another interesting one. In Luke chapter 17, beginning in verse 11, we see the story of where there were 10 lepers who came to Jesus and asked to be healed. And Jesus healed these 10 of their leprosy, told them to go their way, to present themselves, and they would be cleansed, to present themselves to the priests. And so it was as they went, in verse 14, they were cleansed. And one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned and with a loud voice glorified God and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. Again, the story of Elisha, and Naaman, who was healed of his leprosy. There were many lepers in the land of Israel, but who was healed? Here was a Syrian who came to Elisha to be healed of his leprosy, and God healed him. And here Jesus says in verse 17, "So Jesus answered and said, Were there not 10 cleansed, but where are the 9? Were there not any found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, Arise, go your way, your faith has made you well." So here again was a foreigner, a Samaritan, one who was not of the land of Israel, and he came and understood that Jesus was the one who had performed that cleansing for him, and he came back to glorify God, and he was the only one out of the 10 who came back. Again, the parallel between what had been accomplished through the prophet Elisha and what is accomplished through Jesus is interesting. But again, these are the types of things that should have brought great significance to the mind of those Israelites who had witnessed these things. There are so many parallels between the things that the prophets of God had accomplished through the power of God, confirming the message, and through the things that Jesus performed, these miracles, so that they would understand and see that he was an approved messenger from God. Such significance in these signs and miracles and wonders. And before we conclude tonight, I'd like for us to read over in John chapter 20, as John is concluding his account of the things that Jesus had performed while here on the earth. In John chapter 20 and verse 30, he says, "Truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." So again, at the conclusion of all of this, the whole purpose of these things was to prove who Jesus was, his power, and that he was authorized from God. So that concludes us for tonight. Are there any other questions or comments as we finish up? Okay. Well, that finishes. Next week, I think we might be either on the resurrection or some other aspect of it, but we won't be on miracles. So thank you very much for your time and attention.